Welcome to the Membership Guys Podcast. Kick-ass advice and tips for membership site owners.
What's up, everyone? Thanks for downloading the latest episode of the Membership Guys Podcast with me, your host, Mike Morrison, one half of the Membership Guys. This is a show in which we dispense tips, advice, insight, and random ramblings about membership websites. So whether you're thinking about creating a membership, whether you're in the process of planning or building one, or whether you've had a membership site for years and you're just looking for a few pointers on how to take it to the next level, this is the show for you. And what a show we've got lined up for you today. In today's episode, I'm joined by Nathan Chan from Founder Magazine. And we had a great conversation that overran a little bit. Funnily enough, this interview with Nathan was going to be all about Instagram. So I want to talk to Nathan about how to use Instagram as a way of raising your visibility, driving traffic, and so on. But we got to talking more about Founder and what's going on with that brand, how it all started out. And there was just so much value being dropped that we got to about an hour into the interview and realized we hadn't even discussed Instagram. So Nathan very generously carried on the conversation. We've turned it into a two-parter. And this first part is going to be really, really essential listening for membership site owners. Nathan talks about launching a product from scratch when you literally have no customers. So making that first $5 online. Why it's important to deliver no matter how big or how small your audience is. He talks about how he got Richard Branson to appear on his magazine in the early days of its existence, how to pitch to rock star influencers that nobody else is managing to get on their blog or their publication or in their podcast. He also talks a little bit about the differences he's experienced between selling one-off courses, selling a subscription product with his magazine, and selling a membership, because he does have a membership site coming out, which we discussed a little bit. So all of that's tied together into how he's leveraging his brand and all the stuff he's got going on to promote a membership site. So there's a lot of gold in there for any of you guys listening who have your membership already, if you're going to be launching and so on. So without further ado, I'm going to jump into my conversation with Nathan Chan. This is part one of the interview, and in a couple of weeks' time we'll be going live with part two, where we'll be talking all about Instagram. But for now, let's head straight into that conversation. All right, guys. So today I'm joined by Nathan Chan from Founder Magazine, the founder of Founder. How many times must you have heard that one, Nathan?
A lot, man. Never gets old.
Nathan, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. Really looking forward to our conversation. I'm sure a lot of people will have already come across you, but for anyone who hasn't heard of you, maybe they've not yet come across Founder Magazine, can you give us a bit about your background? What's your story, man?
Yeah, sure thing. Thank you, Mike. Look, dude, you know, thank you so much for the kind words. I think we're only getting warmed up, though, bro. Like, nice. You know, we've hit some good strides at the moment, but there's still a lot of work to be done. So for those of you that haven't heard of our work, and I think it'll be a big proportion of your audience, man. But look, for those of you that are not familiar with the brand, we're an entrepreneurial brand. We started off as a digital magazine targeting young, aspiring, novice stage entrepreneurs. That's still generally our target audience, but you know, we've kind of branched out. So we're a monthly publication, digital publication on the App Store, Google Play Store, and we interview super successful entrepreneurs like Richard Branson, Arianna Huffington, Seth Godin, and Tim Ferriss. The list kind of goes on. And we started off as a monthly publication because I identified that there wasn't really a publication out there that served early stage startup founders and business owners. A lot of these publications, I guess, assume you've already started a business. So that was a big part of it. And yeah, just started while I was working my day job. Didn't know where it would end up. Still surprised to this day how far I've been able to take it. And built it while I was working my day job. Took me about a year to build it up. And now we've kind of, Yeah, we're kind of building a platform more than anything now. It's not just a magazine. So started with the magazine, but now, you know, we've got a podcast, you know, we've got, you know, a blog, social channels, and we're starting to get into the online courses. We have a membership platform. So, yeah, just a multifaceted platform, really just a media company now. And, so we've been operating 3 years. We just turned three.
Wow.
And, yeah, we're just getting warmed up, man. Like there's a lot of work to be done, but just having a ton of fun.
Awesome. I do kind of spike a little when I hear that young entrepreneurs, because I've always considered myself to fall into that bracket until I saw some adverts or some local young entrepreneurs networking, and they kind of capped it off at 30. And now I'm starting to feel a little bit old now. But, I know you have like Chris Ducker and stuff on the cover, so he's way older than me. So I don't feel too bad.
That's fun. Yeah, you know, it's funny that, right? Like, how old is Richard Branson, dude?
Yeah,
or Seth Godin, man? Like, some of these guys are pretty old, but, you know, the play here is that a lot of your mentors are a lot older than you.
Yeah.
You know, they've traveled down the path that you want to travel down. And, look, it's funny. I have seen, like, here in Australia, PwC have this award, PricewaterhouseCoopers. They probably have it all around the world, but they have Young Entrepreneur of the Year. And they consider young entrepreneur 40 and under.
Wow.
Interesting, right?
It is, yeah. I suppose that's just kind of reflects how entrepreneurship has changed, I suppose, over the last decade or two decades. Because, I'd imagine kind of a bit before our time, it was sort of in your 40s and your 50s where maybe you'd made a nest egg, you got your family affairs sorted, and then you branch out into the world, unless you were a Branson or someone who, because, you know, remember, Branson was seen as a bit of a wonder kid because he was so young, I think, when he was getting started, and he was quite fresh on the scene.
Mm.
So obviously the Founder Magazine, it's a digital magazine. Now, what made you decide to go down the magazine route? Because, man, that's a lot more work than a blog or a podcast or, you know, what most people just dive straight into if they want to get content out. Obviously, the end result is a lot more impressive. It's sexy as hell in terms of design. I love the design of it and the style of it.
Oh, thank you, man.
What led to that decision? Was it a deliberate move to be different, or was there something about a magazine format that drew you in personally?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Mike. I get this question quite a lot. Mm. And
it's basically what we're saying is, are you nuts?
Yeah, look, I get this question quite a lot, dude. And I wish I could tell you it was super strategic.
Mm.
It was not, man. Like, literally, when I launched Founder, I was still looking for a marketing job, dude.
Right.
Like, I was working in IT, working like in this shitty job. And so funny, because I actually went back to the company that I used to work for, and I did them an Instagram presentation just as a favor to the CEO. So this is a $300 million company. He's one of my mentors now. And I just said, as a favor, I can do a presentation to your marketing team, and because they're leaving a lot of money on the table, not crushing on Instagram. And I'm feeling a little nostalgic because we're talking about back in the day, you know, 3 years ago, even, you know, two years ago. So it took me about a year to build up and right. Before I left my day job. So, man, at the time, I was looking for a marketing job. I was working in IT support. I just absolutely hated it. And I thought I'd just start this passion project. I didn't know that I could build it up to leave my day job. Dude, when I did a launch, like the launch for like the first issue, there was no launch. For the first year, we had no social presence. We didn't even have a blog. It was crazy, man. I just kind of worked it all out along the way. And I was just kind of seeking just a solid business model, to be honest with you, Mike. And along the way, you know, 1 year later, still, you know, right now we've got a pretty solid business model and we've got our, you know, pathway mapped out, but there's still a lot more that we can add to the canvas. Like we haven't added events. We haven't done, you know, we can do so much more. We haven't done any software, like all these other things. But, and I'm starting to think, you know, 3 years ahead from now and super strategic. But back then, no strategy there. All I knew was this, Mike, that there wasn't really a publication out there that served the kind of audience that I was looking to serve.
Yeah.
And I considered myself in that audience because Founders my first serious business. So here I am, some guy producing a magazine about entrepreneurship, didn't even know anything about entrepreneurship. In my early 20s, I didn't even know what the word entrepreneur meant. That's like how green I was, dude. And then the 4-hour work week, reading that book changed the game for me. But to answer your question, not strategic at all. All I knew was I thought a market to serve there, and I knew the magazine wasn't going to be print because that was just way too expensive. Yeah. I never had any money at the time. So I chose a off-the-shelf publishing piece of software to create the magazine. Then we just outsourced everything and just worked it out along the way, man.
Awesome, man. So what was it like for that first year where you say you didn't really have a proper launch? Did you just create it? There it was. Okay, and that, what do we do now? Not having that social presence, what was it like for you building that momentum? Were there points where you kind of thought, you know what, I'm not sure about this? Or did you have that steadfast, you know, total commitment? We're going to see this through. This is going to be huge. Because a lot of our listeners with membership sites, I think one of the biggest fears they have is launching it, or, you know, not having the facility, I suppose, to launch it, not having a crowd to launch to. How did you stick it out through that first year or so when you were building momentum?
I think the biggest thing for me was the first launch on the App Store. Hmm. It wasn't on the Google Play Store then. And that was the first $5 I'd ever made online. And it was just game-changing, dude. And then after a month, I made $80. And I was just like, you know, yeah, okay, you know, told a few of my friends, they laughed at me, and then, you know, the next month we made like $100,
yeah,
and then the month after that we made like $150, and I could just start. I made a couple hundred once we got to month three, but I just could start to see this momentum that we were building,
yeah,
and once I published the first issue, I was like, shit, we actually got people buying this thing. Like, I've got to work on the next issue now because of monthly publication. And the thing that kept me going, Mike, was not around, you know, building momentum or building the audience. I was just really focused and concerned on the paid customers that we had. I didn't want to let people down because that's one of my biggest weaknesses is I care a lot about letting people down. Like, I never want to let anyone down. Like, yeah, it's a problem. Like, still to this day, I write back to every single email because I feel like a jerk if I don't. Unless it's an absolute ridiculous email, I won't write back to you. But it's just a problem of mine, right? And it's just holding me back. But in this instance, I used it to my advantage. So I didn't want to let people down. And from not wanting to let people down, I just shipped every single month, and I built up a really, really, really good shipping muscle. And what do I mean by shipping? I launched, like I produced something and put it out into the world. And we that's what we did with the magazine every single month. And, you know, the first issue of the magazine didn't even have a successful person on the front cover.
Right.
It was a stock image. It just looked absolutely ridiculous. You can go back and look at it. It's like this guy with like this Superman. Like, it looks like he's Superman, and it's just so dumb.
I was wondering who that was.
Yeah, that's nobody, man. This is grassroots, dude, and that's how I built the momentum, just shipping and building the magazine up. And when we got our big break in – yeah, so in the first four months, we were sued for trademark infringement by a big magazine in the States. We recovered from that, changed the name to Founder, and just before we got sued, I landed the interview with Richard Branson. So that was going to be for issue number 8, and we made the Branson issue free. And that was a big tipping point for us because we use that as a way to generate social proof. And, you know, we made that issue free and, you know, it got people through the doors. And, you know, I saw a big step up in growth. And by the time that after we went through the lawsuit, I was like, yeah, I think I can make this work. I was like, I think I can build it up, make, you know, enough money to, you know, because we were bootstrapping and we were outsourcing everything. It didn't cost that much in terms of operating costs to produce the magazine, Mike. And I was just extremely frugal. And I said to myself, yeah, look, I think that we can make this magazine, replace operating costs, and, you know, make enough money so I can pay myself a small wage and you know, turn this into something. And, you know, I was still like thinking, Mike, like even when I left my day job, that maybe I was just going to do like a lifestyle business. And That's what I had to work out. It took me about 6 months to work out whether I was going to build a lifestyle business or an actual startup. And I chose the startup path. And ever since I chose that startup path, that's when I really, really started to ramp things up, man. And you know, I'd left my job and kind of found my feet. And yeah, around that time, that's when we found Instagram too.
That Branson call, how did it feel when that call or that email came in to say, yeah, he's in?
Oh, man, that was the best ever. Because, dude, I pitched for a Skype interview and they said, you know, like, please understand that, like, he's super, super busy and, you know, how long have you been around for? I spoke to the head of PR and she's like, he's like, how long have you been around for? And I was like, oh, you know, about 4 months. And she's like, oh, wow, you're so new. And she's like, I tell you what, just send me an email and I might take a while to get back to you, but I promise I will. And like, I thought I blew it, man. Like, I was stumbling. I was all over the place. And, you know, 3 weeks later, she got back to me and said, yeah, look, yep, done. Awesome. And I was just like, boom. And I was super, super pumped. And, yeah, we worked with his team. And, yeah, that was a big changing point for us that really built the momentum, Mike. And then just shipping every single month, like just focusing on the product in, you know, shipping even if we had 10 readers at the time. Yeah. and not wanting to let our audience down. If people were paying money, even if it's only $2 a month, man, even if it's $3 a month, whatever, just being constantly concerned with the audience that you have, no matter how big it is, and just kept building momentum from there.
Landing that big fish there, you know, for podcasters, bloggers, and, you know, basically anyone who's trying to score interviews in this sort of space within the world of online business, you have that upper echelon of guys that everyone wants to speak to, you know, Amy Porterfield, Pat Flynn's, Chris Tucker's, Michael Hyatt, and, you know, you're joining their ranks too as well. But someone like Branson, he's next level. So that must have got a lot of people's attention very quick. And then you've obviously gone on to land some of the huge fish, Seth Godin, Tony Robbins, you know, people you're not seeing on podcasts. Really, you're not seeing in you know, Joe Blogg's blog. What sort of approach do you have? What would your tips be for someone trying to land a big interview? Not that way we suddenly want Richard Branson's PR representative to be inundated with emails from our listeners, but what sort of approach did you have? Did you just kind of, was it a hit and hope, or was there a strategy behind it? Do you think the magazine format gave you a bit more credibility than, say, a podcast or just a blog?
Yeah, so I never knew it at the time, but the magazine definitely has given a lot of credibility as opposed to a podcast or a blog.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, it's there's a lot more perceived value around a magazine and have a front cover, and there's something really sexy about it, man. even if it's not a print magazine, you know, And then we use the social proof with the Richard Branson piece. It's a no-brainer. And then we have quite a sizable audience as well. And then it's even more of a no-brainer now. So
that's still free now as well, the Branson.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, still free, yep. So there was a few distinct things that we've done, Mike, to build the brand and to get these interviews. So I'd like to share these with you because I think you really hit home with what I think you're trying to get at. And the few distinct things we did was we created a magazine. We shipped it every single month. We produced brilliant content for that publication. But we were very, very focused on design. And, you know, I learned that lesson about design from a dear friend, Karen, who has been working with us since the beginning, and he's designed the magazine, he's done all our branding, and he still does it, you know, 3 years later. And you know, he taught me the power of design, and I knew that in the App Store you want to have brilliant design because, you know, Apple, look at Apple, man.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, same goes for any apps. You're not going to trust an app to even just the screenshots if the design looks crap. So I learned the power of design from there, and then having these influencers or ambassadors from there, you know, I learned around how to build an epic brand with like great design and amazing ambassadors, and how to build trust, and you have brilliant content, and then you got a solid business and a solid brand. And then from that, we use that as leverage. So we got the magazine, you know, using that as leverage. Then we had the Richard Branson piece. So we scored, like you said, a big fish. And then, you know, some of the strategies I have were like, you know, if people were looking for interviews, like I knew that Tim Ferriss was looking for interviews because to promote his TV series that he launched last year. I knew that Seth Godin was looking for interviews. And, you know, we don't just interview, you know, the Tim Ferriss, Seth Godin's. Like, we have like the founder of Y Combinator on a future front cover issue, like, or like Brené Brown, and these are people that may that are big rock stars in the eye of the public, or maybe not so much, but I see them as massive rock stars as well that are not on everyone's podcast or get interviewed. So we don't just interview, you know, the big time entrepreneurs. We try to spice it up as well. But to answer your question around the tactics and strategies, one, are these people looking for interviews? If they're looking for press, then there's a few different ways you can go about it. Because if they're looking for press, you're more likely to get an interview. Same with Tony Robbins. He had a book. So one thing you can do is you can look at the Amazon coming soon. And that will help you identify if any books are coming out soon, because anyone that is launching a book, they have to submit their publisher, or even if you're self-publishing, people usually submit them to the coming soon because then people can pre-order. So like Gary Vee did that, you know, for example. You know, that's how we got the interview with Gary Vee. He had his big book, you know. Yeah, you know, same thing, man. Like, so you look at the Amazon coming soon page. You want to look who the publisher is, if they do have a publisher, and you want to get in touch with their head of PR. Some of these people use agencies. Like, for example, Tony Robbins and Tim Ferriss use the exact same marketing agency,
right,
which is Brass Check Marketing, run by Ryan Holiday. So if you can get in with those guys, they'll actually come to you before, like if you build a good relationship, they'll actually come to you before, like once they're just starting to tee all the interviews up in prep for the book launch. So, you know, a big part of it is relationships as well, but also finding these agencies. So, you know, we've interviewed the founder of Zero Accounting or Indiegogo or Eventbrite. They all came from PR agencies that I have relationships with. You know, this PR agency, they're like, I'm trying to get them to get me an interview with the founder of Dropbox.
Nice.
So, it's because they have a relationship with Dropbox. So these are the kind of things that I'm always doing. And then also when it comes to pitching, there's many different strategies and tactics you can use. We wrote an in-depth blog post called, if you go to FounderMag, FounderMag.com/get-interviews, interviews with an S at the end. It's like a 7,000-word blog post where we reveal our exact system that we use. But a big piece of it as well is finding the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
So whether it's, you know, whether it's the virtue, whether it's that person's assistant, whether it's that person's PR person, whether it's an agency they're using, you might have to pitch. Eventually, you know, if you build up enough cred, people will come to you, and we get that a bit now, but we still do pitch all the time. Like I've pitched for the founder of Slack and they said no. I pitched for Oprah. They said no. I pitched for Jamie Oliver. They said no. But all of them said, come back.
Yeah.
Let us know soon. You know, and I'll come back in 6 months. I'll follow up, dude. That's another thing. A lot of people don't follow up. Barbara Corcoran. She said no, and then I can't even like I can, when I showed him like I actually attached the rich. I always attach the Richard Branson feature so they can get an idea of how the magazine front cover will look, and then we repurpose it because we do a Skype interview and we repurpose it for the podcast. And you know, she said no, and I came back and I said, okay, 6 months has passed. This is, you know, how many more people we have in our audience. This is what we can do for you. And would you be interested? And then they said yes. So, you know, even just following up, dude, you know, some people get a shutdown and then they take that as a shutdown for forever.
Yeah.
You know, sales 101, bro. You know, how many no's do you need to get to before you get to the yes? Mm. So that's a big part of it as well. And then when we pitch now, like we make it an absolute no-brainer. And you know, in that article, we shared the exact pitches that we use as well.
Awesome, love that. And that tip about the press agencies as well. I think it's very easily forgotten because these guys who you're reaching, they're not the sort of people where you're going to just be able to find their email online, drop them a note and, you know, ask them directly, do you want to pop on the podcast? You know, they pay big money to companies to do that for them. And
that's right. So they look good if they get these people interviews.
For sure.
Like they have to write reports on like client exposure. So then they go, oh, okay, you've paid us, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 this month, and this is how much exposure we've got you.
Yeah. It's funny because probably about 10 years ago, I'm a huge nerd. I love video games, all that sort of stuff. So about 10 years ago, I was involved in online radio. It was a little internet radio station for gamers. And a spin-off project we did for that was a digital magazine. Before the App Store, before the technology was really there, my partner, this was just a hobby thing. My partner was an insane developer, programmer. And he built, you know, those page turner apps that you see now on websites?
Yes.
He kind of built one of those before you could find them. And we created this digital magazine based around online gaming. It was free. We had about 250,000 readers for the first issue, heading towards 500,000 for the second. The server got hacked. He didn't have any backups. All the work went. And so did our enthusiasm for the project. Yeah, but with that, exactly what you're saying there just reminded me of that about press agencies. You know, we looked for the games that were coming out and we contacted the press agencies. And like you say, it's kind of their job to score that visibility. Admittedly, we were mainly doing it because we wanted to get some free video games. But, you know, we locked down some big, big interviews that we'd been trying to get for the radio station where we actually did live voice interviews on air. And we had a much harder time scoring those because it was a newer format. It wasn't familiar, but the magazine side of things, was different. But, I still have the odd war style flashback to that email that I got saying that we'd lost all of that work with the magazine. But
oh my God, man, that's devastating, dude. Sounds like you're onto something though.
It was one of those things where, you know, it was such a hobby thing that you know, you don't really know kind of what you want to or anything like that. But it was fun. It was good. It was a lot of work, but kind of like you were saying, just bootstrapping it together. Let me say this was back in 2006, 2007. Anyhow, sorry, little trip down memory lane there. I'm probably going to snip that a little bit.
That's all good, right?
So obviously I know you were recently speaking at a tropical think tank over in the Philippines with my fellow Brit, Mr. Ducker, and you're going to be at Social Media Marketing World in just a few weeks' time. Actually, we'll both be there, but I'll be in the audience.
Oh, awesome, man. Look forward to catching up, bro. Yeah,
for sure, man. I'll be the sunburnt English guy. So, but how does it actually feel now, just a few years on, to be sharing the stage with the sort of people who, you know, you were kind of reaching out to and trying to score interviews with just a couple of years ago? How does it feel to be there with them?
Well, I don't know. This answer might surprise you, Mike, but to be honest with you, dude, I haven't really thought about it. And I don't know, it is a great feeling, and these are great opportunities that I'm getting. But to be honest with you, I'm not that big on my personal brand, dude. Mm. Like the reason I'm doing these talks is yeah, it's a good, like, you know, experience and whatnot, and it's great and it's fun and stuff like that. But the real place to grow founder, like, I'm doing these speaking gigs for networking, man, to network with the other speakers. I don't really mind. Like, my thing is, you know, I'll do. I've said now I only want to do 4 keynotes, if they are keynotes, you know, out of Melbourne, whether it's interstate or international. I do 4 a year and cap it at that, because I'm just so focused on growing founder. And yeah, I don't. Yeah, I've never really thought about it like that. But you know, it's really. It is cool to grace the stage with some of these rock stars. But at the same time, man, that doesn't really mean much to me, to be honest. Yeah. That's just where my head's at. I'm not that big on the personal brand thing. I'm all focused on growing founder.
Yeah, so it's more just so that, you know, you're there with people who you can bring into founder to build that brand.
Yeah. Or just meet, you know, like, I look forward to catching up with you, dude. Like, you know, just meeting people. That's my game. Like, that's where it's at. Like, even just, you know, connecting with the other speakers and networking and learning from other people. That's where it's at. I'm not really. Yeah, I'm not that really big on talks. Like, I know I can do a good job with them and stuff, yeah. But and I'll openly do them if people ask me, but I've got my limit. But yeah, biggest focus is founder. The whole play is founder. I'm even going to detach myself from the brand even more, in the sense that I probably won't do the founder podcast forever.
Right.
I'll get someone else in our team. Like, it's yeah, I don't want to make founder about me,
yeah.
To answer your
yeah.
question. I'm not interested in building like a Gary V personal brand or anything of the sort.
I suppose that's the thing. I mean, you know, if you ask me to name the person behind the most, you know, the top 10 most read magazines in the UK, I could not for the life of me name that. So I suppose, yeah, that kind of having that sort of personal brand, you're almost competing with the founder brand if you know the Nathan Chan brand gets too big.
Yeah. Look, and that's something I'm mindful of. I think I try and think of it like this. So, and it's something I'm pretty obsessed about, to be honest, Mike, at the moment. So I try and think of it like this, like Richard Branson, how like he's a massive ambassador for the Virgin brand. So I'm Nathan Chan, I'm a massive ambassador for the founder brand. But in terms of the actual product, you know, the product is called Founder, the magazine is called Founder. Yeah. I don't even touch the magazine anymore. I gloss it over and have a look, but I don't put it together. Same with the blog. I don't do any writing on the blog. We've got an editor and a full-time content guy. I teach the Instagram course, one of our products, and you'll see me in the videos for Founders Club, just because I'm the leader and I'm the CEO and the founder of Founder, but I spend a bit of time in the community, but it's not about me. We have a dedicated community manager. And the only thing that I need to really fully detach myself from the brand so it's self-sufficient without me is that Instagram course. All our future courses will be taught by other people.
Yeah.
And the podcast. And yeah, maybe I can still do the podcast just for fun. Not sure. See how we go. But yeah, that's something I'm very, very mindful of, Mike. I don't want to build a cash flow-based business. I want to build an asset-based business.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Richard Branson isn't flying transatlantic flights, you know, 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, but it is, you're right, it is a very thin line, and I'm very mindful of it. Yeah,
for sure. Now, you mentioned a couple of things there. You mentioned your Instagram course, and you mentioned Founders Club. Now, obviously, Founder the magazine, it's a subscription product, so you know,
yep.
There's a lot of shared elements between that and, you know, the sort of membership sites our listeners will be building. You've got Founder Club, which is in a private beta right now, which is your membership site.
Yes.
And then you've got your Instagram course, and the Instagram course was kind of the one-off static, you know, traditional kind of e-course. How different have you found marketing and selling those kind of one-off products versus the more subscription-based aspect of that is kind of at the core of Founder and obviously is going to be in place for Founders Club too?
Great question. I think with the one-off stuff, like the Instagram course, I think you can work a little hard. Like, so the thing with the one-off stuff is I think of also like the price tiers as well. So like the Instagram course right now, we sell it's the public at $2,000, $1,997, and you know, the way that we sell that product is mainly through webinars and email,
right.
And with the magazine, that's all organic now. Like it's just word of mouth and mainly App Store SEO that we're getting a lot of organic and just word of mouth and brand. We don't work that hard to sell a magazine, a little bit through email, but not too much, yeah, to be honest with you, Mike. And then for Founders Club, I guess the big two correlations I've found is when someone has a one-off purchase, if you have a 30-day money-back guarantee or 60 or whatever, you still have to have a solid onboarding process,
yeah,
and you still have to re-communicate the value during that trial period, what have you. But with you know, a magazine and a membership site, and I think more so with a membership site, you have to resell every single month and really, really showcase the value and communicate the value. So it's not like a one-off sale. It's like you're selling every single month. Like you want to have – we don't do this with the magazine, but with Founders Club. Like you want to have random bonuses when somebody's a member for 3 months, and you want to give a gift to someone once they've been a member for 6 months. You want to reward that kind of stuff, man.
For sure. And I think that, you know, we talked about briefly before we hit record, that's where so many people fall down because they don't realize that kind of long-term commitment. Because, you know, a membership, it's a value exchange. You know, I'm a member, I'll keep adding value to you in terms of, you know, adding funds to your bank balance, adding contributions to your community and so on, for as long as you keep, you know, giving me value month on month, year on year. And I think a lot of people miss that because you see all this stuff with online courses, for example, where it's all these tales of the 7- and 8-figure launches and all of that. So I think people get seduced by the idea of doing the same sort of thing with a membership site.
Yeah, I think so too, dude. And, you know, I can speak from experience. It was funny, I was talking to a friend. I was ranting about this to a friend today. We did a big launch for our Instagram course, you know, our first ever Jeff Walker-style launch.
Yeah.
And it did quite well, like very well. But the amount of money that you make after you pay affiliates, you know, you pay Facebook ads, yeah, you know, you consider the amount of time that you and your team like put in blood, sweat, and tears, the payment for production, like, you know, to produce the videos for our launch cost over $20,000.
Wow.
Like, because we want to do super high quality on brand, of course. And then also you take into consider, you know, refunds and actually people that go on payment plans and their card keeps bouncing.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you take all that into consideration, dude? You do a $1 million launch and the amount of money that you make is nowhere near $1 million,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we are definitely not going to live off launches, and it's definitely not the bee's knees. And I'm a massive, massive believer in recurring and have treating that as your core business. I don't know how a lot of these other guys do it, where they're going to do four launches a year.
It's just exhausting.
One each quarter, and then I don't rate that. I rate it as a good influx for cash flow,
yeah,
but you know, core business is where it's at, and you know, you don't rely on it, and that's what I'm all about.
Yeah, for sure. I think I remember reading kind of an unofficial analysis of Marie Folio's B School launch, maybe a couple of years ago, where somebody actually broke down what you know, that $2 million launch probably actually worked out at. And yeah, I think she pays 50% to affiliates, and then you've got the refund rates and you've got your costs and expenses. And I suppose if you're relying on it, it just takes one bad year. If you're only releasing once or twice a year, it just takes like one or two bad spells to completely kill your business.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. So yeah, I like launches. I think they're good for, you know, building your email list, spreading the word. A great benefit for us. You'll love this one. Your audience is going to love this one. All right. So when we did our launch, we had a one-click upsell for Founders Club.
Right.
So we launched Founders Club to a very, very small portion of our email database. Like, you know, I think it was maybe 1/10 or 1/12. And we got a couple hundred members from that. And then from there, it was in beta. And then for the Instagram domination launch, we did a one-click upsell. And it was like, it converted at 34%.
Wow.
So we got a few hundred new members through that.
And these are people who are paying $1,997 for a course.
Yeah, so at the time, we sold the course at $997. Mm. So we've recently increased the price because we have to stay, committed to our word. Like,
yeah,
we say the price is going to increase, we increase it. Yeah. So, that one-click upsell crushed it. So if anybody's listening to this, you want to know a great way to sell your membership, one-click upsell from a high tier down to a low tier, a lower priced price point, significantly lower. So you're going from, you know, $997 to, you know, $40.
Yeah.
is crazy, no brainer, man. And if you can communicate in the one click upsell, I think videos work well. You know, do use a video for the one click upsell because people really understand what they're getting. There were a few people that still, you know, just click through and then they want a refund because they didn't realize what was happening. That's fine. But if you really communicate the value and you communicate the correlation between the two products, then it's a no-brainer.
Love it.
And that's a gold tip for the audience right there. I probably shouldn't have even shared that one. It's that good.
No, love it. Because I think people quite often use their membership as a downsell to that big ticket item. But tagging it on there as an upsell to that too, especially when you open that $1,000, $2,000. If someone's going to spend $1,000, they're going to spend $1,040. You know, it's going to happen.
That's right. You know, that's right. And they can test it out. And if they like it, they don't like it, whatever. But, we've had a lot of success with that. So, yeah, we will do launches, Mike. I said to the team, we'll do max 2 a year. Great influx of cash flow, but I'm super focused on Founders Club. I'm super focused on, you know, we want to have at least 5 to 6 more products, evergreen products taught by other people by the end of this year. And we will sell them on webinars every single week. And, you know, we don't have to worry about all this launch stuff and costs and all that other crap. And we'll still do the launches and be good influx of cash flow, but I'm really focused on recurring core biz and having our own products and just doing it all on our own, off our own bat. That's just the way I feel about it all.
Awesome. So what can you tell us about Founder Club? Because it's new, it's very exclusive at the moment. You're going to be opening it up a bit broader over the coming months or so. What can you tell us about what's coming with that?
Yeah, so the whole play with Founders Club, Mike, was, you know, one way that I worked out like what the business model should look like for the magazine was I found this website. A friend recommended it to me, and this was another magazine owner, a digital magazine owner that was doing really well, called Mequoda, I think it's UODA, and what these guys do is these are magazine publishing consultants. And their bread and butter, actually, I think they're from the UK too.
Right.
Their bread and butter is they help people or publishers that have been publishing a print magazine for like 20, 30 years and now they're struggling because the digital age has come in. And, you know, they charge a hefty fee. I've never paid them. But on their blog post, they lay out their whole formula. And I've just followed that whole formula, dude. They talk about, you know, moving your magazine digital. We've already done that. They talk about, you know, building your email list. They talk about building up your blog, building up your social channels. They talk about thinking of your magazine as a platform and your brand as a platform and building a multifaceted platform where you've got a membership site, where you have other courses, where you have a, you know, we haven't even gone into the advertising stuff. We don't really do much ads, but we're going to soon where we pair it up, where you get an ad on the podcast, like a fully tier, like a, you know, a cross promoted across all of our assets, you know, the podcast, you get a magazine, you get the podcast, you get the blog, you get the newsletter, you get the Instagram, whatever. But long story short, I just followed their model, and their model has been always to introduce a membership site. So that was one of the reasons I decided to create the membership site. Another reason was because I felt that we needed a way to connect our community together. We had these silos occurring. We had an audience on our blog. We have an audience on our social. We have an audience on our newsletter. We have an audience that listen to the read the magazine. We have an audience that listen to the podcast. So I wanted to connect everyone together. And I didn't want to just create like a free Facebook group.
Yeah.
So another question that people were asking is, how do you get the magazine on your computer? I have a Microsoft Surface, or, you know, I don't have an Android device. I don't have an Apple device. How can we read the magazine on the computer? So that was another thing that people were coming to me to as well. Another, a lot of people say they want access to a lot of people we interview, and with all of that, we create Founders Club, dude. So you know, inside Founders Club, we have the community. We connect people up, and we're working on creating a way to do like these masterminds, pretty much exactly how they do them at Tropical Think Tank, but virtually. And we're going to do them like every 2 weeks. And this is the kind of stuff we're working on. So like people will come. Have you heard of the tool Zoom?
Yes. Yeah.
So you can have rooms, as many rooms as you want, right?
Yeah.
So we'll cap each of those rooms at like 10 people or 20 people. And then we'll use a tool like Intercom to spit out like, you know, and we'll create like 10 different rooms. And we'll use a tool like Intercom to segment all these different people, maybe where they're from or whatever. Mm. And then, you know, we'll set these dates up in these rooms, and we'll say, guys, on this date and this time, you'll randomly be chosen, and you'll go into whatever room, like you'll be randomly chosen. We'll segment you out, and we'll create these rooms, and just random people from all around the world will come on at the time, and like you'll get five people in one room, 3 people in another room, 10 people in another room, and then we'll just do masterminds, and we're going to do that every couple of weeks. We're going to test it out, see how it goes, but that's a piece of it that we're working on implementing as well. Masterminds, you get access to the community, which is, you know, just boss entrepreneurs that are doing cool stuff, business owners, founders. And then also you get access to the magazine. So you get access to all the latest issues as we release them each month, plus all the back issues. Another thing that we've done is we've got this, a lot of people, we're all paying for SaaS, right?
Yeah. You know,
we pay for, at Founder, we pay for 50 different SaaS, dude. And
I thought ours was bad.
Man, well, we're 10 times worse. And like, one of the things is we have all these networks, right? Like, why don't we utilize these networks with these brands that we've already collaborated with, or we've interviewed their founders? So we created Founder Club perks. Mm. So you get over like $10,000 worth of savings in all these different SaaSs like Intercom, Lead Pages, ClickFunnels, Olark, you know, Stripe, you name it. So that's another thing you get inside Founders Club. And then another thing, it was around the mentor piece. We have monthly mentor calls where you can do hot seats and you can come in and you can learn. We bring in experts. And eventually I'm going to call in favors and I'm going to try and get like Seth Godin and Tim Ferriss. I'm going to bring them all back so people can actually speak and ask questions to some of these guys. And then what else is there? Oh, then we have weekly recipes. That's another thing. So we do like it's in between a full-on course and an in-depth blog post. So it's like mini courses inside the membership site platform. So mini courses inside Founders Club. We call them recipes. And they're pretty much like how to do a high converting webinar. There's two videos for that, and it's about 10, 15 minutes. And you get a little sheet, like a little infographic that'll show you the exact format of how to do a high converting webinar. So just all sorts of pieces like that, you know, how to create a high converting landing page, you know, what are the elements? These are core things that founders should know. And there's a few other things, but that's everything into Founders Club. So there's a lot there, dude. And the recipes are weekly as well.
Sounds awesome, man. And it's obviously you're putting a lot of value into it. And you can see when you're talking about building up the whole platform of it, not just being here's this ring-fenced membership site, here's this ring-fenced podcast, here's the magazine over here. You can see there everything tied together, and you can easily see how that could then evolve into live events, which you mentioned earlier, and it all just kind of flows across all these different mediums.
Yeah, that's it, man. So I think eventually we would start tapping into live events, and I think like we'll probably do a conference, like a once a year conference, and that'll be just for people in Founders Club. Yeah. Like it'll all spring out, but I think there's a lot of room for us to move in the event space too, and Founders Club will be will be like a place to do the testing ground, so we can have a meetup and have. People doing meetups wherever around the world that are in Founders Club, because in person is where it's at, dude. I learned that when I went to Tropical Think Tank. Because, like I said, I'm not that big on these talks, but I'm happy to do them and a ton of fun, and I know I can do a good job. But it's crazy because I've never been to a conference. I don't really go to these conferences, dude. And Tropical Think Tank was like the first international conference, like business conference I've been to. And it was crazy, like how powerful in person was. Like that's where I understood how powerful these masterminds were that they did every day at Tropical Think Tank, because they were so magical, man. Like there were people there, and even in level, like if you were on a table of six people, and there was someone that, you know, does 100K a year in their business and someone else does 2 mil, both those people were able to add value to that person's problem on what they were masterminding on in many different ways. It didn't really matter how far you were down the journey. Just there was a lot of gold shared. It was really magical, and I really want to be able to capture that and input it into Founders Club. We'll see how we go. Maybe we have to build some software to do it. I don't know. Maybe we have to create some software that is like Tinder. So when you first sign up, you have to fill out some details. When you first sign up to Founders Club, you have to fill out some details, and then you'll get matched according to where you're from, like, you know, where you're at with your business in terms of turnover, what industry you're in. You'll be automatically matched. Like there'll be an algorithm, and then it'll automatically create like a room in Zoom where, you know, you have a scheduled meeting and these like groups will collaborate together. I don't know, but this is the kind of way I'm thinking, Mike. Like real big community play, bro. Because people, like you've said, you always say this, they come for the content, they stay for the community.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that sort of stuff, you know, I mean, that sounds, yeah, that's right up our street. Very exciting. We'll be keeping an eye on that. We'll be joining you there in Founders Club when you open the doors. We join every membership site, but there's only a few that we stick around on. So something like that, yeah, that sounds definitely right up our street. As membership site experts and as entrepreneurs as well, you know, both sides of the coin. So that would be really, really cool. All right, guys, we're going to leave that chat there. Hopefully you guys have been able to get a lot of value from Nathan's experiences and what we discussed around building the founder brand, building out the magazine, how he's grown that, and how all of that now is heading towards a membership model. I really, really enjoyed the chat with Nathan. He's a very cool guy. He's a very generous guy. There was actually a little scheduling snafu, and when we talked, it was about 11:30 p.m. his time over there in Australia, and I'd actually gotten the guy out of bed to do the interview, but we went on for about 90 minutes or so, and the remainder of that conversation is going to be released as a separate podcast episode in about 2 or 3 weeks' time, because that all focuses on Instagram, which is another big thing that Nathan's been involved in. And we're going to be talking about how to grow a following and how to leverage that following for your business. So keep an eye out for that in about 2 to 3 weeks' time. But for now, we're going to wrap things up. Hope you guys have enjoyed this episode.
please do tweet us at Membership Guys to let us know what you think. Tweet Nathan as well and let him know you enjoyed the episode. Let him know any feedback or any questions you might have. Tell him that we sent you. And as always, we appreciate and we value each and every review we got on iTunes. So if you want to say something nice about the show, hop over to our iTunes page and leave us a nice, shiny 5-star review. I'll be back again very soon with another episode of the Membership Guys podcast. If you've enjoyed today's episode of the Membership Guys podcast, we invite you to check out the membersiteacademy.com. The Membersite Academy is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of starting, growing, and running a membership website. So whether you're still figuring out what your idea is going to be, or whether your website is already up and running and you're just looking for ways to grow it and attract new members, then the Membersite Academy can help you to get to the next level. With our extensive course library, monthly training, exclusive member-only discounts, perks and tools, and a supportive, active community to help you along the way with feedback, encouragement and advice, the Membersite Academy is the perfect place to be for anyone looking to start, manage and grow a successful membership website. So check it out at membersiteacademy.com.